Today's Taisho will be on a koan from the Zhuangdong Lu, a Chinese collection of koans. This is the story of the encounter of the awakening of Lin Ji. Initially, Lin Ji was associated with the practitioner attendants in the assembly at Mount Wangbo. While there, the head of the monks' hall persuaded him to put his questions to the master. Lin Ji asked, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the west?" Wangbo immediately hit him. Lin Ji asked this question three times to Wangbo, and each time he was greeted with a blow. Subsequently, Lin Ji announced to the head monk that he was departing. "Earlier, I received encouragement from you to put questions to the master, and was only granted blows from him. I regret that I am so stupid and will leave shortly for other locales to practice." The head monk then reported to Wangbo, Even though Lin Ji is young, he is very talented. When he comes to bid farewell, please, Master, provide him with further encouragement." The following day, when Lin Ji bade Wangbo farewell, Wangbo suggested that he go to see Dai Yu. Lin Ji, as a result, visited Dai Yu. Dai Yu asked, "Where have you come from?" Lin Ji replied, "I have come from Wangbo." Dai Yu said, "What instruction did Wangbo give you?" Lin Ji said, "When I personally asked him about the meaning of the Bodhidharma, I was immediately struck by him. I asked this question to him three times, and each time I received a blow. I don't understand where my fault lies." Dai Yu said, "What a kindly old grandmother Wangbo is. He thoroughly exhausted himself on your behalf, and still you look for it, where the fault lies." As soon as these words were uttered, Lin Ji experienced great awakening and stated, "Why, Wangbo's Buddha Dharma is not such a big deal after all." Dai Yu grabbed his staff and said to him, "Why, you bedwetting little devil, you just finished I don't understand Wangbo's teaching, and now you say something else, that Wangbo's Buddha Dharma is not such a big deal. What principle of the way do you see? Speak, speak." Lin Ji struck Dai Yu in the ribs three times with his fist. Dai Yu pushed Lin Ji away and said, "Your teacher is Wangbo. You are of no concern to me." Lin Ji took leave of Dai Yu and returned to Wangbo. Wangbo said, "You've come back so soon." Lin Ji replied, "It's just because of you being such a kindly old grandmother." Then, after he paid respects to Wangbo, he stood in attendance next to him. Wangbo asked, "What words and phrases did Dai Yu have for you?" Lin Ji proceeded to relate his former conversation with Dai Yu. Wangbo remarked, "Next time I see that old rascal Dai Yu, I'll give him a blow straight away." Lin Ji responded, "Why talk of waiting to see him? I'll give you a blow right now." Lin Ji proceeded to strike Wangbo with his fist. Wangbo said, "This crazy fellow has come here to pluck the tiger's beard." Lin Ji yelled out. Wangbo said, "Attendants, take this crazy fellow to the practice hall." So I want to thank everybody for coming here today and sitting so well, so beautifully, deep, deep immersion in concentration, deep, deep. That's how it's done. So important. Long, deep sitting, deep sitting. Linji, before he came to study with Wang Bo, was already ordained, and he originally intended to be a Vinaya scholar. So, in other words, Linji had studied all of the teachings, and he knew the Agamas, the Sanskrit versions of the Pali canon, and he knew the Prajnaparamita literature, he knew the Yogacara literature, he had read the most of the sutras that we will be studying in our sutra group. And yet he was unable to wake up. So he went to study with Wang Bo. He sort of left all of that behind, and he went to study with Wang Bo. And the backstory was that Linji studied with Wang Bo. He sat at Wang Bo's temple for 3 years, okay? And he never went to see the teacher. He just came into the temple and he sat, and he was a student there, a student monk, for 3 years. And one day, this very sharp-eyed attendant noticed, this guy's sitting really well, really beautifully, deep, deep practice. And he's wondering, why is this guy never going to Dokusan? Why is this guy never going to meet the master? There's a little bit more to this story than this narrative. Linji says when the attendant monk, the Karmadana, asks him, why haven't you gone to see the master? He says, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. See, that's, I think, such an interesting thing. Here's a guy who has been studying the sutras all this time, has read all the Mahayana canon, the Pali canon, and now he's practicing at Wang Bo's place. And he can't even open his mouth. He can't even open his mouth. Doesn't even know what he would possibly ask. You think that's so strange, right? That's so strange. How can he not know what to ask? So many of us would, we could imagine that if we went to study with Wang Bo, and we had all this knowledge, we might go to see Wang Bo and say, is emptiness, this experience I'm having on the cushion when my mind has no thoughts, is that emptiness? Or we might, he might say, when I feel good on the cushion, is that the Sambhogakaya, right? He has all this. But, he can't even think of a thing to say. And I think that's really so important. It's like, I remember years ago, I went with Genki Roshi to see a film at the Seattle, Seattle is a big film town, I should say. And there's a film festival every year, Seattle Film Festival, and it's really international films, really quite wonderful. And they always had a lot of entries from Japan, and one of them was more or less a documentary, basically, but very beautifully done. And this documentarian went into this monastery in, I don't remember where it was in Japan, but the conditions were very austere. In a place like Daitokuji or Eheiji, they don't have central heating, right? So if it's, you know, if it's 30 degrees outside, it's 30 degrees inside. And it sort of took us through the day. You know, the monks got up and they had to wash their faces in these basins. And, it showed them putting water in the basin and then just splashing some of this water on their face so gingerly. And I thought maybe this was being mindful, but later Genki Roshi explained to me the water was just taken from, like somebody broke the ice in the barrel of water and brought that water in for them to wash. So it's like freezing cold in the bathroom, freezing cold on their faces. So they're just putting a little water on their faces, and basically they go into the Zendo and meditate. And later the documentarian has a couple of them, and he says, why are you here? And you know, this was such an I don't think very many people in the audience would have sort of gotten the point. But they're like unable to answer that question. They're unable. It's like that question has come out of left field for them. They don't have anything to say. You know, they literally are like mute. Why are you here? You know, they've obviously given up their secular lives. They've come to this temple. They're going through this training period, an ango training period. And it's, you know, very, very austere. And when this guy says, why are you here? You know, I was expecting them to say, you know, I'm in search of enlightenment. I'm in search of enlightenment. Or, you know, I want to be a Buddha, or I want to be a Bodhisattva, or, and it's like, the question doesn't even make any sense. And at the time, I didn't really quite get it myself, I have to confess. You know, but, you know, when I started out my practice in 1976 with Genki Roshi, you know, I thought I had motivations. You know, I had read a lot of books on Buddhism, and it was very intriguing, really interesting. And I had read books by D.T. Suzuki and Lu Kuan Yew and C.C. Garma Zhang, all of these people who were, you know, really brilliant expositors of Buddhism. And there was like a lot of interest among young people in Zen. So I had lots of reasons for getting interested in Zen. But you know, the interesting thing that's odd about this is once I started practicing, those questions, those interests, or you know, those matters that I would have thought were important just completely fell away. And if somebody had asked me, you know, we used to get up every morning and drive to Kugeon, our Zen center in South Seattle. John Sunston, my friend, the neuroscientist, he was a brain anatomist in the medical school at the University of Washington. He would pick us up in his Volkswagen bus and we'd all drive down to Kugeon. And as soon as we got into the Zendo, Genki Roshi would open all the windows. It was just, sometimes I'd think, maybe he'll forget today, right? But he wouldn't forget. He'd open all the windows. It would be really cold, right? And under my robes, I had like three layers of wool, right? You know. I would just sit there in the freezing cold in the dark. And I suppose that if somebody had asked me, why are you here? I would not have been able to answer. You know, and it would have been really hard for me to formulate an answer if I were pressed, right? It would no longer have been relevant to me to say something like, I want to achieve enlightenment. Or I'm trying to understand my mind or understand my, you know, it's like under the surface, you know, we live on the surface of our consciousness. It's like if you think about consciousness, the mind, you know, we live like on a tiny, tiniest part, the surface of the mind. And, you know, we don't normally, we live in a forgetfulness of our true nature. And the nature of the conscious mind, or the small mind, the discriminating mind, is that it fills in all the spaces so effectively that it seems that that's all there is, right? It seems like it fills in all the, it's like it doesn't give you a chance to notice the spaces in things, right? And so, you know, basically we live in this world of ideas, symbols, concepts, and we internalize them, and they dominate our consciousness. You know, people worry about things that they can't possibly change, or they think about things that really have no bearing on their lives, right? They worry about things, you know, that are absolutely inconsequential. They, you know, go to their graves filled with regret, you know, because they haven't done something, you know. And all of this is like a very superficial, this is a very superficial way to live. It's engaging just a small part of our consciousness. Right? It's like we're living on the surface of consciousness. And when we feel something's missing or we feel ungrounded, we generate more material, right? So we just start producing more ideas. You know, when I was in graduate school, there was this big movement called theory in France. It was called post-structuralist theory. And the post-structuralists generated like this huge body of thinking. And if you try to read some of these books, I invite you to read some of these books. Like there's a book that's like 700 pages by these two French philosophers named Deleuze and Guattari. And they're really interesting thinkers, right? There was a person named Derrida, there's a person named Foucault, and you could hardly keep up with all this information. And, you know, conferences were so busily engaged with their ideas, and people would have bitter fights that would end friendships or destroy careers, right, over these ideas. You know, that was in the 80s and the 90s, you know. Everybody in my field had to have French theory under their belt. You know, if you went to graduate school, you had to take courses in French theory. If you went for a job interview and said, well, what does Monsieur Derrida say about that? And you couldn't say, you know, it was like, oh, well, he's obviously not a candidate for this job. You know, if you flash forward half a century, where is all that? Where is all that? You know, actually, the other day I heard somebody in my department, somebody mentioned Derrida, and he laughed. He said, oh yeah, Derrida, oh my gosh. That's like half a century ago. You know, oh my gosh. Is that ever passé, you see? But you know, this is a product of our, you know, the way we've constructed everyday consciousness in the modern world. And in fact, I would say it's become even more of a problem because, you know, you can only read books for so many hours a day. You know, when I was young, I would read for graduate studies, and then I would go out and see my friends, and I'd get on the bus and go downtown, and maybe I'd go up to Capitol Hill and watch a movie during the Seattle Film Festival. there were moments when, you know, I was more or less engaged with what was happening from moment to moment. But now, you know, so many people are on their phone. You know, it's like even the little spaces that that world allowed us are increasingly sort of closed up by other things of the same kind, right? So it's not necessarily abstract ideas, but it's a video game, or it's I'm looking at TikTok, something on TikTok, you know, and so you know, it generates incredible complexity, and that complexity feels thick and rich sometimes, but it's very shallow, and it's very artificial, and I'm not denying that there aren't consequences. So, like, you know, Mr. Trump is going to have his economists make decisions, and other economists are going to object to those. And those consequences of what they do are far from trivial. So I'm not saying that these matters are not important. They have really significant real-world consequences. I'm not making fun of this. But at the same time, you know, the human being is like an iPhone that's used for a doorstop. Right? It's like we have these apps, so to speak, that we never know are on the phone and never open up, because we're so engaged with the small number of apps we do open up. And, you know, most people don't have any idea. You know, today in the Zendo, you know, people were really, we sat for, you know, we've been sitting here, some of us, for 5 hours, right? And motionless in deep, deep samadhi, deep concentration. This is a kind of consciousness that's unfamiliar to billions of people in the modern world. And yet, you know, actually, it's the foundation of all awareness. If you go just a few inches under the flashing lights at the top of our consciousness, you know, you begin to enter these mysterious depths, right? And once you begin to enter those mysterious depths, it's really a foreign world, right? It's really, really different. You know, people who have done Zazen for a while understand this, right? And people who haven't done Zazen don't understand this, or people who haven't done some kind of meditation practice, right? I even worry that, like, mindfulness, in a way, you know, actually mindfulness could be a real problem, you know, because people are just attending still to, like, the surface of consciousness. So if I hear a sound and I want to be mindful of that sound, I keep bringing my mind back to that sound, right? You know, that's a very constraining. I'm really not in the big mind when I'm doing that. You know, you begin to encounter the. It's like there's a mind that can think, right? There's a mind that can think and that can choose. And it uses information, and there's a mind that has like a will that decides, you know, this is what I want to accomplish, this is what I want to do. And most of us live our lives in that place. But actually, there, within yourself, there's like an unexplored continent. And there's like, I'm Kurt on the surface of my mind. But when I begin to sit down in Zazen, you know, actually you could even say that what I'm doing is mindful. I'm not even mindful. I'm really, truly, you could say mindless. You know, I'm not trying to focus on, I'm focusing, if I'm working with a koan, I'm focusing on my koan. But, you know, if I'm not working on a koan, I'm not focusing on anything. And it would be possible to say that my mind is empty, but you know, actually, there's a deeper consciousness under the surface of our minds, which doesn't follow any of the laws of consciousness at the that operate at the top, right? And it's not mindful. It's you could say it's mindless, right? If you stay in that state long enough, it's like you're sinking down, down, down through the layers of the mind. And you encounter, like, you could say, within yourself, there's, when we think, when you hear people say, the Buddha is within you, it's like, oh, how lovely that would be, right? How lovely that would be. The Buddha is within you. And people think, oh, that's great, what is Buddha? Ordinary mind is Buddha. Well, but, when you begin to find ordinary mind, you have to go deep, 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 right? And Lin Ji is somebody who's come to this temple, and he's going so deeply into the mind that he doesn't even know what to ask the master anymore. It's like he's beyond that way of thinking, right? He's processing in this very powerful way. He's getting very close to to his Buddha nature. It's like inside of us there's a stranger. It's a stranger. It has no name and no age, no time. And, as we practice more and more, as we spend more and more time in that place of unknowing, of not knowing, we're drawing closer and closer to our true nature. And as that happens, when we're on the cushion and when we're in samadhi, more and more of our surface life just goes away. It's not important. It's as though we're drawn to an encounter with the master, with the stranger in ourselves. And, when you get just a taste of that, you realize, most people never get a taste of that. Most people read a little bit about Buddhism and say, oh, it'd be nice to be enlightened. If you begin to practice the great way in earnest, you begin to encounter this emptiness. It's like you begin to have a taste of those depths. And when you begin to have a taste of those depths, you realize, it's like your whole being says, I have to go there. I have to go there. It's like you're being drawn down into the depths of the mind, by like a force that's irresistible, actually, right? It's irresistible. When I started doing Zazen, I went to a couple sesshins, and it was like nothing I'd ever experienced in my life. And by the way, sesshin is the heart of Zen practice. It's the essence of Zen practice. And I went to a couple sesshins, and it was like nothing I'd ever experienced. But, Zen was starting to take up more and more of my time. And I decided, I'm not going to go to sesshin. My wife and I went to Vancouver, BC, over the sesshin period. And I couldn't enjoy myself. It was like something inside myself was calling me to do this. And I certainly have missed sesshins because of conferences and professional obligations. But that sesshin was really, that period, that week we spent in Vancouver, was like I could not betray that part of myself. We've had other vacations, just not, when sesshins were scheduled. But it was like something deep in myself was speaking to me and saying, go down into that depth and find that. You don't even have words to name it, but go to that place and find it. And I think this is operative under the surface of our minds if we practice Zen. It's like you've had this experience of the stranger in yourself. And it's powerful, it's gripping, and you have to go there. You have to meet it, him, her. And, you know, you just keep going down, down, down into the mind. And at some point, motives no longer exist, right? No, your whatever motives you might offer. That's the way it was for those monks at that monastery who were interviewed. You know, they were in a totally different place. They're processing in a totally different way, right? Motivation, reasons, those are all gone. And it's just this, it's meeting your original nature face to face. So anyway, Lin Ji is like this, right? He, you know, all these monks are there and they're practicing, and the Karmadhana realizes there's this one guy, you know, he just sits. And he sits and he says, why haven't you gone to see the master? And I think what Lin Ji really says is, I have no idea what to ask. And I, you know, that's somebody who's in a really deep place. It's a really deep place. So this is not just an ordinary Karmadhana. This is somebody who's deeply awake. And he realizes that, you know, this person needs some help if he's going to go, he's going to meet the stranger, you know. So he says, the time has come now for you to meet your teacher, to meet Wang Bo, and speak to Wang Bo. So Lin Ji comes in and he gives this, he asks this question, which is, if I may say so, it's a half-hearted excuse for a question. He has to say something. So he says, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? Which is this, you know, it's a totally phony question, right? It's and Wang Bo doesn't, Wang Bo hits him. Wang Bo won't have, it's like, don't go back to that level. Don't go back to that level. Be in the depths. And Wang Bo hits him. And Lin Ji asks the question three times, and each time Wang Bo hits him. Subsequently, Lin Ji announced to the head monk that he was departing. Earlier, I received encouragement from you and put questions to the master, but I was only granted blows from him. I regret that I am so stupid and will leave shortly for other locales to practice. The head monk, you know, conveys this to Wang Bo, who says, even though Lin Ji is young, he's sitting very deeply. You know, when he comes to bid farewell, the head monk says, even though Lin Ji is young, he's sitting very deeply. When he comes to say farewell to you, master, please give him encouragement. So, in traditional Zen temples, sometimes people would use hitting as a way of helping people wake up. I don't approve of that. You know, if you've noticed, we don't have a stick. In many Zen temples have what's called a kyosaku or keisaku, a teaching stick. It's called in Chinese an incense board on the altar. And the Karmadhana goes around and each morning patrols the aisles and makes sure everybody's posture is good, and if they're moving around, hits them with the stick. There's like a ritual of hitting them with the stick. They hit the meaty part of your back. You bend over, there's a certain way to bend over, and you have a bunch of muscles under your scapula that surround your rib cage, and if the person hits you properly, it doesn't do any damage, but it's really kind of a startle. And I myself don't approve, I don't really think that's productive. I really think there's complicated reasons why that doesn't make sense anymore. So I don't use that. But you know, sometimes when we experience that kind of direct, powerful contact with our bodies, right? You know, it cuts through all of these layers of all of these, you could say, mental habits, all of these layers of identity and psychological defenses. And for just a minute, there's like, for just a minute, you have no name and you have no identity and you don't know where you are. If you have ever had a fall, right, where it hasn't been an injury, but you know, a few years ago I was jogging outside, and I was jogging during the winter, and there was some snow on the ground, and I went around a corner at a high speed, and there must have been some ice under the snow, because as I was you know, trying to take a curve, I went flying, and I fortunately I was okay. I landed on the fleshy part of my back. I was okay, but for a minute there's a minute there where you just it's like everything is knocked out of your head, you could say, and there's just like it's like you're reduced to like the most primitive kind of awareness, right? It's like this absolutely primitive awareness. And then you start reassembling yourself. You say, well, am I okay? You know, and you start checking your body. You realize, first of all, oh, I'm here. I'm in a body. Am I okay? And you start checking yourself out. And then you get up and you realize, oh, I'm okay. That was lucky, you know. And maybe you walk home instead of jogging the rest of the way. And next day you get up and it's like, oh, man, right? But for a minute, you're no one. It's like that experience, it's like you're knocked right out of yourself, you're knocked right out of your ordinary consciousness. It's just this primitive awareness. And you know, I think when Wang Bo hit Lin Ji, it's like that, right? Lin Ji is speaking in the language of ideas. And the language of, you know, he's trying to make a good impression. You know, he's playing that game, maybe. And Wang Bo gives him a blow, and for just a second, he's not Lin Ji anymore. He's just this bare attention, bare awareness, right? Like primitive awareness. And Lin Ji tries to recover from that, and it's like Lin Ji's coming up from the depths, and Wang Bo is pushing him back down into the depths. It's like, no, no. Wrong direction, down, 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 into the depths. And you know, third time, Wang Bo sort of hits him and reduces him back to this primitive awareness, right? Lin Ji doesn't have a breakthrough. He doesn't go back down and encounter the stranger. So it doesn't happen then. But you know, all of this training is like this. All of this training, you know, you come in to answer your call and the teacher says, no, that's not it. And you've been working for hours or days and you feel so helpless and you feel, you know, all your resources are exhausted. And then you just sit in that formless, that you start descending into the depths of the mind, right? That's what we do. We descend into the depths of mind, down, down, down. And, you know, we begin to make contact with the stranger. And, you know, we start surfacing again and go into Dokusan, and now we know what to say. We don't know how we know, but we know. So, Lin Ji goes to Wang Bo and he says, I'm obviously incapable of solving, of waking up. I'm going to, I have to take your leave. And Wang Bo says, well, not so fast, you know, go see Dayu. So Lin Ji, as a result, visited Dayu. Dayu said, where have you come from? Lin Ji replied, I've come from Wang Bo. Dayu said, what instruction did Wang Bo give you? Lin Ji said, when I personally asked him about the meaning of the Buddha Dharma, I was immediately struck by him. I asked this question to him three times, and each time I received a blow. I don't understand where my fault lies. Dayu said, what a kindly old grandmother Wang Bo is. He thoroughly exhausted himself on your behalf, and still you look for where your fault lies. As soon as these words were uttered, Lin Ji experienced Dai Kensho. And you know, it's like all this time, Lin Ji's discriminating mind is just sort of operating in a very shallow way. You know, he's discouraged that he didn't answer his koan. He's probably wondering, if I leave this temple, what temple will I go to live? He's probably maybe thinking, when I go to practice with Dayu, I will, you know, maybe I'll find a home in Dayu's community. You know, maybe I'll wake up someday. This is all going on the surface. But underneath, there's this process going on. You know, it's all under the surface. You know, it's like we don't see the depths with our discriminating minds when we're practicing, but we're dropping down into the depths, and we're gradually unraveling all of our mental habits, all of the layers and layers of mental habits that hold us in bondage are gradually dissolving. We don't see much of this with our discriminating mind. All we know is we aren't answering our koans, right? But under the surface, there's all this processing going on, all of this. And it's like you're descending through the layers of the mind until you get to the core of the mind. And the core of your mind is your Buddha nature, right? And until you reach that, it's completely out of sight. It's completely out of sight. But when you reach that at some point and you've cleaned away all the obstructions, it's like you realize this is who you really are. This is who you really are. You know? It's like all of these other people you thought you were, these are just the masks you wear for these social occasions. Deep processing takes you down, down, down through the layers of the mind. And, you know, the mind looks blank and dark until you reach the bottom. And then its character changes. And now you realize the character of your mind changes, and you realize this is who I really am. And when that happens, you know, people who have had Dai Kensho, they all say the same thing. Oh my God, I realize it was there all along. It's like a fish being in water and suddenly saying, oh my God, there's water. Who would have known? Who would have guessed, right? It's like I realize this enlightened mind has been right here all along. I just didn't see it. See? And that's so common. When people have that experience, when they have Dai Kensho, they, oh my God, I realize this has been here. It's like right to my on my right hand side. This has been here the whole time I've been alive. So, Lin Ji's, you know, if you don't know much about Zen, all of this seems like a cryptic story. It's like, huh? He gets hit. He goes to another teacher. The teacher asks him what happened. He tells him what happened, and now something's happened. What's happened? It's all happening under the surface, right? He's descending through the layers of the mind. He's working through the last of his energy habits, and he gets to the bottom of the mind and the core of his consciousness and realizes this is who I really am. And so he says, you know, this has been there all the time. What do you know? Wang Bo's Buddha Dharma is not such a big deal after all. And Dayu realizes as soon as, basically, Linji says, you know, it's been there all the time. Who would have guessed? And Dayu realizes this guy's just had his Daikensho. And he says, well, you bedwetting little devil. You just finished saying, I don't understand Wang Bo's teachings. And now you say Wang Bo's Buddha Dharma is not such a big deal. What principle of the way do you see? Speak. He already knows. Linji struck Dayu in the ribs 3 times with his fist. Dayu pushed Linji away. He's delighted, right? He's delighted. And he says, your teacher is, you know, I didn't do this. Wang Bo did this. Go back and see Wang Bo. Linji took leave of Dayu and returned to Wang Bo. Wang Bo asked, you've come back so soon. What? How come you're back so soon? He doesn't know yet. Linji said, it's just because of you being such a kindly old grandmother. You know, I tried to climb out of those depths and give you a bullshit question about why did Bodhidharma come from the West or something, and you pushed me right back into the depths over and over again. You were trying to show me this. You were trying to help me to wake up. And I wasn't ready yet. But now I see what you were getting at. Then after he paid his respects to Wang Bo, he stood in attendance next to him. Wang Bo said, what words and phrases did Dayu have for you? Linji proceeded to relate his former conversation with Dayu. Wang Bo remarked, next time I see that old rascal Dayu, I'll give him a blow straight away. Linji responded, why talk of waiting to see him? I'll give you a blow right now. Linji struck Wang Bo with his fist. So you know, more strikes, more blows. It's like, you know, Linji knows who he really is. And he knows that who he really is who Wang Bo really is, right? So, same. So it's like, you know, you discover that at the core of yourself, you're really, that's something you share with your teacher, with your fellow students, everybody. And so, you know, it's like Wang Bo taught Linji how to cut through discriminating intellect, to go back to like that moment of primitive awareness, right? Just, you know, please don't slap me in the Dokusan room, and I won't slap you. But, you know, the idea is that, you know, sometimes that physical contact, right, is very therapeutic, actually, right? It's like, for just a minute, you're not Kurt anymore. You're just awareness. And then you start reassembling all your mental habits. But for just a minute, you know, if you now look back at your mind, there's a chance you can see to the bottom, right? See what's really going on there. So, you know, actually slapping became a big part of Linji's practice. And many people woke up. There's a koan about Jojo-za stood still. This is a guy who's been frozen for 20 years, unable to wake up. And Linji gives him a smack, and all of a sudden he looks inward at his own consciousness, and he sees his Buddha nature, you know. And that's his Daikensho. Wang Bo remarked, Linji said, why talk of waiting to see him? I'll give you the blow right now. Linji proceeded to strike Wang Bo with his fist. Wang Bo said, this crazy fellow has come here to pluck the tiger's beard. Linji yelled out. Wang Bo said, attendant, take this crazy fellow to the practice hall. So, you know, he's not Linji anymore, really, you know. Once we make that connection to the core, it's like once we've had our revolution at the base, it's like there's a revolution at the core of ourselves. You know, now we thought we were Linji, but it turns out that's just a mask we wear, right? In America we have the concept of demonic possession, right? Demonic possession. So the devil possesses you, right? But actually there's such a thing as divine possession, right? Where, you know, basically your enlightened nature possesses you, or you've returned to your enlightened nature. And now you're just your enlightened mind pretending to be Kurt, or your enlightened mind pretending to be Jill, and so on. And you realize these are just hotel rooms we live in right now. And we'll go on to the next hotel room. So that's what happened to Linji in this koan.